Hello, thank you for listening to the Stone Cold Shots podcast.
Such a good name.
Every episode here, we're going to be revisiting a wrestling pay-per-view, be it current classic WWE, New Japan Pro Wrestling, or whatever else we really feel like. Today, your hosts are...
Josh Felix Pryor. I'm an internet darling.
My name is Julian. Julian, one of three.
I'm Lauren. Maxine.
And I'm Campbell. So today we're going to be talking about WrestleMania 30, which I think is sort of the modern classic of the WrestleManias.
Absolutely it is.
WrestleMania XXX, but not the porn
like,
parody.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like I was expecting Vin Diesel to pop out.
Or Ice Cube.
So before we get into this, we're going to sort of go through it segment by segment, match by match. But where were you guys, or like, did you watch this as it happened originally?
Yeah, I paid my $9.99 like everybody else, you know? I remember just watching it and like at the end just being like, this is the best WrestleMania I think I've seen in the last, you know, 20 years.
Cool. Julian, did you watch this?
I watched it live. I was getting right back into wrestling after not watching it for like 10 years, but like CM Punk and Daniel Bryan were kind of pulling me back in. It was like my secret guilty pleasure at the time. So yeah, I watched it live, but I watched it like alone in the dark in my room by myself. Yeah. It wasn't until like a couple years later that I brought other people in. I was like, hey, I like wrestling.
Check out my dirty secret.
Join my Facebook group.
Yeah. As one of those people that Julian brought into wrestling later, I did not see this live. I watched it, like, I think we got into wrestling like 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been, I feel like we watched this pretty soon.
Yeah, this is definitely the thing where I think, like, Julian, when you introduced us to wrestling, Daniel Bryan was, like, on a hot streak and was definitely sort of, like, my first favorite wrestler.
Wait, Julian introduced you to wrestling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hey, buddy. Good job.
And so this was the thing where people were like, oh, you like Daniel Bryan? Well, have I got the show for you?
There's a lot worse on the show that you're really going to come to hate over the years.
Yeah. Speaking of a lot worse on the show, we open with Hulk Hogan hosting... WrestleMania 30.
I think you're skipping over the intro, which again transported me back into the French Quarter. It was beautiful. They had the band there. It was like I was on Bourbon Street with the band. Sheamus was there. It was great.
It was brassy and jazzy.
And then Hogan came out.
Hogan came out. Did we all have the same Vietnam flashback to Crown Jewel when they said hosted by the immortal Hulk Hogan?
I think all the wrestling fans across the world said, finally. This is what we've all been clamoring for. This old racist to come back on our TV.
Yeah, I missed that guy.
So... as much as I would love to just clown on Hulk Hogan for the next hour.
That'd be awesome.
We're renaming this podcast the Fuck Hulk Hogan podcast.
Yeah, we're going to get it out of our systems now. We're going to go down the line. Everybody gets one. Everyone gets one Hulk Hogan roast. We're going to get it out of our system.
I said, this idiot comes out and says the wrong stadium. that was my note. And then the fans correct him. And then everybody clowns on him for the next 20 minutes.
I don't have a good roast lined up. What's with that feather boa? Burn.
I liked it.
Oh. Yeah, me too. Right.
I see we all kind of went outfit heavy because I was going to say Hulk Hogan looks like a guy who dressed up for a party that he thought was a costume party and then his other two friends showed up and it was clearly not a costume party.
Like that Babadook meme.
Yeah. Yeah, and then
nice.
He progressively sort of removes layers of the costume, but it's still clear that he's wearing a fucking bandana and has that mustache.
Honestly, his costume is a bajillion times better than Stone Cold, who comes out looking like a dad.
And his skin is like old worn leather, so it's like a costume on top of an old dried out cow.
Stone Cold looks super boring, right?
He's wearing. Like, just normal man jeans, normal man shirt. Like
he's a normal man. That's like that's been his thing.
I hate it. You're on the stage.
We're going to butt heads on this one. Well, my notes,
you
I'm
hate
like,
Stone Cold's everyman Stone... gimmick? That's literally Stone Cold's
he
gimmick.
He needs to always be wearing that leather vest.
He doesn't.
And nothing else.
What?
Imagine.
No black tights. Nothing else.
This is progressively a segment of, like, Hogan is fumbling over his lines, and it feels like Stone Cold's music hits way early, right? Like, totally. Stone Cold like, comes out.
Because, you know, he just wanted to get his shit in, yeah, right? Like, he was like, oh, man, I'm going to fucking roast this guy.
But then Stone Cold starts fucking up his lines, too.
Yeah, he sounded drunk.
Yeah, and The Rock's music hits way early, and The Rock fucking saves this entire segment.
I don't know. Like, I when I was watching it, I was like, man... Stone Cold's like the most over guy in the entire world.
Yeah.
And that's until Daniel Bryan comes out later, right? Like, but like, I was just remembering how cool Stone Cold was. But like, yeah, you know, he was like, honestly, he showed up to the arena in that outfit. He didn't change for WrestleMania.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. You're on the greatest stage of them all.
You think he's going to come out in like bedazzled jeans?
I want him to come out in more than like a John Deere ripoff shirt, like Old Navy bootcut jeans and like white sneakers.
He's crushing margaritas in the back of catering. It's like Stone Cold, you're up. He's like, what? It was awesome. Yeah. And then The Rock came out, and The Rock's always great. The Rock is like, you know, he's always gonna nail it. He like had some cute rhymes. I think
he's a professional.
He's a pro.
What was Rocky wearing? I don't remember.
He was wearing,
oh my god, I have a note
like
about this.
A very tight cutoff Just Bring It shirt.
It was so tight, and he dunked water just right before coming out, so it looked like a wetsuit.
It did. I was like, is this an Under Armour shirt?
It looked like a wetsuit.
Yeah, I was like, it's hot.
He's sponsored by Under Armour.
And he looked this predates fucking jacked.
Yeah.
He looked fucking jacked. He looked good. Like, Hercules looking good right
They
now.
Did reference, did that movie just come out?
Yeah, okay. They called him Herculean, or they...
I think they literally said, Hercules. Himself. Oh, you wrote that down too.
This segment kind of got me thinking of like who do you guys think on like the current roster or even like the roster 5 years ago could in 10 or 20 years like host WrestleMania? Like, is there anyone that you think right now could potentially, because that's what the WWE is, that it's then now forever, just nostalgia.
Cena's the easy answer.
I was gonna say, is he too past now, past tense already?
Cena would be
Elias.
Cena would be like the Hulk Hogan.
Guys, New Day.
Oh yeah, well they already hosted though.
I know, but like they can come back in 15 years. Come back 55 years old throwing a pancake at people.
Or whatever their gimmick is.
Cena, I think, is obvious. But like Cena would be like the Hogan, and then would there be like a Rock and a Stone Cold? Like, would you have like Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins hosting WrestleMania?
I would hate Dean Ambrose hosting.
There's no Stone Cold and there's no Rock right now.
Yeah.
What about Becky Lynch?
Oh, she's awesome.
She's Stone Cold right now.
But she's not there yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she's definitely like on her way.
I wonder if like Alexa or somebody like that, who's just such a good talker, could eventually be on that level. She's not.
Yeah, they're just like not larger than life yet. Stone Cold and The Rock like transcended wrestling, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're pop culture.
Yeah,
and there's nobody right now.
Yeah, I guess just D-Bry.
Yeah, like even D-Bry, like I just don't know. He doesn't like move past what wrestling is, right? Like for wrestling fans, D-Bry is the best. Like we all love him. But in pop culture, I mean, like, outside of Total Divas or Bellas, right? Like, there's not a lot of D-Bry out there.
Yeah, who's a legend who would suck at hosting WrestleMania? Undertaker.
Yeah. So, moving on, we have Daniel Bryan versus Triple H.
Right before this, Jerry Lawler toasts Mountain Dews with Michael Cole.
I'm glad
that JBL.
I'm glad that you're calling my shit on not paying attention to the interstitial.
I just find it strange that you wouldn't make note of this.
I want to know all the product placements in WrestleMania.
Yeah, we have Daniel Bryan, Triple H. More importantly, we have the promo package for Daniel Bryan versus Triple H.
First note is like, good is WWE at the promo packages? Like, I forget.
Yeah.
And then I'll go back, I'll watch like WrestleMania 17. Like
My Way.
Like, best.
Even the Money in the Bank 2011 with CM Punk and Cena is amazing.
Oh, so good. Yeah. WWE is so good at building these promo packages. Like, it's insane. And like watching this Monster one, and even like doing like monster, monster.
Yeah, no,
and then like him going from no beard to
they
a
show
beard.
Him becoming a monster.
Like, he's literally transforming in front of my eyes.
I get teary for this promo. It's weird.
Awesome.
And I guess a bit less so now that he's back.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember when I was first like watching this promo package, he was retired.
Yeah,
and it was so affecting to see the promo package because it's so good.
Yeah. And, like, my second note is, like, how much has WWE wasted Daniel Bryan? Yeah. They had like this huge opportunity right now to do something. Yeah. And like, you know, he's doing the heel thing, which is cool.
Yeah, I like, but where like he is.
Hot, fresh out the gate, he starts feeding with Big Cass. Come on.
Come on. Yeah. What are you doing, guys?
I liked how much of the Monster promo package has been recycled for like every pay-per-view match he's had against The Miz this year. Like the whole first third of the Monster promo package.
Just like, yeah.
Speaking of recycling, I also thought that, like...
Everybody should be recycling.
This is... How many times has Triple H had this match at WrestleMania in the past, like, 5 years? Right?
What?
This is the only match that Triple H knows how to do anymore.
Honestly.
Like, yeah. I'm the man in the position of authority, and you're the face that I'm trying to downplay. My hot wife is going to intro me, and then I'm going to have a super boring match where I just work one limb. Like, he did this with Roman. He did this with Seth Rollins.
Well, sometimes he comes in on a motorcycle or, like,
Yeah, you can't beat Triple H's entrances.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
What did he do this year?
I'm really excited about it.
Go ahead.
This is the one where he comes out. It's not... Not Motorhead yet. He comes out to like operatic, like on a chariot thing. And he's got three hot babes who are definitely Charlotte, Alexa, and Sasha.
Yep.
Which I was like, did he handpick them, do you think?
Well, this is the
most gross
WWE thing that I can think of like
that was a true start of the women's evolution, right?
You have these women that like are in NXT or like about to be sort of like the ushering in like this revolution in women's wrestling, and the same guy who's like pushing them for that is like, yeah, they're just gonna be sex objects for my entrance at WrestleMania.
Yeah, and the true
I legitimately want to know if he was the one who picked them.
Probably,
like, why
really
not?
Weird.
He's so like involved with like all the NXT stuff, right? So
he's not picking them for talent. He's like, you're hot, you're hot, you're hot.
But I'm sure they
buds.
Got like a WrestleMania paycheck for that. So mad about that?
No, but
I'm like, okay, not like, sorry, I'm not trying to like downplay men picking women as I'm sorry.
You want to rewind that?
Delete that. Yeah.
Yeah, like this was like, I think the start of like the modern day authority, but like we've had this authority battle before.
Yeah.
You know, as wrestling fans, we've seen it a bajillion times, and it's so played out. But this was the start. I think, you know, like, looking back at it, I was trying to, like, get myself back into the place when I was watching it live. I think at the time, Triple H versus Daniel Bryan was a good authority figure feud. I think since then, they've really, you know, like, it's been so, like, with Roman Reigns, when it was just kind of like, forced down our throat at the time. It was so tough to watch. It's like, you're just trying to redo Daniel Bryan, trying to do Stone Cold, right?
The Roman Reigns WrestleMania match, of like the three that I mentioned, where it's like, I feel like Triple H has this match over and over again. The Roman one is definitely the worst.
Yeah.
The Daniel Bryan one, I think, is the best because it has that heat going for it.
Sure.
And then the Seth Rollins one was like, yeah, this is fine.
I kind of like the Seth Rollins one. I just feel like they didn't execute it quite well enough.
Yeah, because they both have a potential to make like, you know, like to do a great match.
And there was a really great story there.
Sure, yeah.
Well, I think it's just a thing where it's like the heel targeting the body part is like a wrestling match as old as wrestling. But it tends to kind of undercut, like when the whole point of your match is like, oh, the guy that you like can't do anything cool because he's too injured. There's tension there, but it doesn't make for anything exciting.
But it's almost a lost art because, you know, like in my notes, I had like, you know, Daniel Bryan really sells this shoulder thing.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and they make it like the focal point of the story, like even after the match, like Triple H going after him. And like
that was the best part, I think, was the after the match was the best thing.
And I think it's more on the wrestler to actually sell it properly and make it part of the story, because you can do that. But we've all seen, like, you know, somebody working over the knee the whole match, and then he's jumping on the ropes and doing it's like, we've all seen it. It's like what? Like, and then it like it removes you out of like the suspension of disbelief. And it's like, you know, it's like, it's not why I'm watching wrestling. It's like, why am I thinking about this? Why am I that asshole?
Yeah.
That's like, hey, his knee was just getting beat up for 20 minutes. It's like, I don't want to be that person.
Well, yeah, because
don't make me be that person.
It's the line between being, like, the believability of, like, oh, he shouldn't be able to do that cool flip,
exactly.
But also I want there to be cool flips.
So I'd rather have, like, the Daniel Bryan not being able to do anything and really selling it than, you know, the opposite of that, right?
Yeah, overall, like, maybe also because, like, it because we're going back and watching this and we know how this pay-per-view ends, but it feels a little telegraphed to me. Like, it feels sure. like I think they gave this match a lot more time than they necessarily needed to, because I'm sure that even live, it was a kind of a foregone conclusion that it's like, yeah, Daniel Bryan's going to win this.
You know, like, I was trying to remember, like, again, like, when I was watching it, you know, I knew that Daniel Bryan was probably going to win, but there was, like, part of me that was like, these motherfuckers
they
are
might
so
just put Triple H in the main yeah. event.
They might just do it and just, like, ruin this entire event.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I think they did a good job of putting that seed in my head.
Mm-hmm. I think that's part of watching WWE, though, is like, you're like, I'm pretty sure they're gonna do the right thing,
yeah.
but there's a chance they might just fuck
go to Saudi
all
Arabia.
Up.
But yeah. these motherfuckers.
There's a chance that Brock Lesnar just might beat Randy Orton's head into the fucking mat.
They've done it to me so many times.
All right, so going from a match that maybe got a little bit too much
I gave this match 3.5 bald heads out of 5.
Thanks, bald Dave Metzler.
So next up we have the New Age Outlaws and Kane, for some reason, against The Shield. Everybody's...
Oh, you didn't know? You had better call somebody.
I love all 6 men in this match.
I miss Corporate Kane so much.
Corporate Kane wrestling in dress pants is the funniest thing.
Can I tell you? That's how I go into work. I'm a bald guy with no shirt, and I wear slacks. And it doesn't go over well at the office. But I'm like, no, it's like Corporate Kane.
Yeah, and you're like, it's fine. I'm not wearing the mask anymore. Don't worry. I'm not wearing the mask in the unit.
My parents were both killed in a fire.
It's such a good look, because he also, like, his body and his haircut look super businessman-y. And
let's get back to Kane's body.
Do we want to talk about Kane's body hair? Do you think he shaves his chest and back?
And I noticed the lack of burns. Like, you know, somebody was horribly scarred in a fire.
Yeah, weirdly no burns.
No
scars.
Burns on his body, just like this
real baby
Herculean.
Skin.
Bigger.
I also miss Seth's blonde streak.
Yeah.
They should bring that back. That was a good look. Bring
it's
back
like
Seth.
Rebellious
yeah.
blonde streak.
Was... Blonde Seth I'll Rollins and Corporate Kane, I think, need to make a return to the WWE.
And Corporate Kane's mug. What was it?
World's best director of operations.
That's the one.
Yeah, this is a squash. I mean, like, I don't think there's too much to say about this match.
I mean, it was dumb, but, like, I loved the New Age Outlaws when I was growing up, and I loved Kane, and...
Yeah.
It was like a nice passing the torch.
A throwback, you know. Yeah.
This is, as someone who wasn't really watching wrestling at the time, it was really funny to see a demon from hell and two guys called Outlaws.
Mr. Ass.
Yeah, saying like, oh, your ass didn't know, and
I don't think they were allowed to say ass. No, for real. Like, by 30, they weren't allowed to say ass anymore.
Come together.
But so you have these guys that are representing the authority, and then three dudes in, like, matching cop mm-hmm. outfits who, like, that... felt a little incongruous.
Sure.
Welcome to wrestling.
Yeah. I don't know. That, like, and then this definitely feels like it was right in the middle of the, like, all right, we got to make Roman look really, really strong in every match.
But this
era.
Is before anybody knew.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? So it's like, just like the Rumble. I don't know if it was that year. But
it was. They talk about it a lot on commentary. Yeah, like, they do a lot of putting Roman over on commentary where they talk about, he just broke Kane's record and now he's beating the shit out of Kane.
I was just listening for Jerry Lawler's one-liners. So I probably missed that. But yeah, like, you can tell, like, that was, like, in, like, the seed stage of, like, you know, like, you know, they're really going to get behind this guy. And the fans, like, weren't, like, wise up to it yet. Like, they're like, oh, yeah, this guy.
Well, no, it was like a push. It was like a Drew McIntyre push right now. It was like,
yeah.
It was like, okay, like, we can get behind this guy. But it wasn't yet, like, to the point where, like, Vince McMahon was, like, literally just, like, boosting Roman's bottom from behind.
But Dean was still, like, the leader of the group at the mm-hmm. time.
Yeah,
know?
They focused on Dean a lot.
Yeah, because it's like...
Even
it's
just
like
with camera angles
like
and stuff.
Seth and Roman, and it's like, and the United States champion, Dean Ambrose, right? Right. Like, so it's like, oh, Dean's the guy.
Yeah.
Dean's the leader who got the most, like, camera time, I feel like. But
well, I mean,
Roman
gorgeous.
Was...
I mean, so is Roman. So is Seth. Come
That's
on.
That's true. That's true.
They're three handsome men.
Yeah.
That's true. That's what I took away from this match.
Yeah.
Three
I did.
Really good looking guys.
Against two old guys and an old...
Demon.
Libertarian. Mayor
Knoxville.
Knoxville.
I did really like The crowd popped so much when Roman hit that double spear.
That was sweet, though. And it was,
there was part of me that like rolled my eyes, and I was like, "No, that was cool. Don't be a piece of shit.
Don't be that guy." Yeah.
Something I noticed was that Roman was fighting extremely quickly. Like looking back on it now, he doesn't. Well, he doesn't fight at all right now.
Oh, come on, Lauren.
Hopefully, he fights his leukemia extremely quickly.
He's way more like methodical and slow. I feel like recently. I feel like they just build up to his like two or three moves that he does, and I think that's running around.
Like, if you look at like Cena, right?
Yeah.
Cena's like forever, like the five moves of doom or whatever, like they said, right? But I think that's like the formula for like the top guy in the WWE. It's like a few signature moves, couple go-tos that like fans will pop for every time they see, you know, kids can get behind it, you know? And then it's like, that's like carbon copy of like what Cena was. They did for Roman and it's, you know, worked pretty well.
Yeah.
Right? I did like to see Roman moving fast though. I thought he looked great.
In the dress.
Look, moving fast.
All right, so next up we got a toy ad with Sergeant Slaughter that is longer than the match preceding it.
I didn't know who a bunch of those people were. I wrote Sergeant Slaughter and some demo with a 2x4.
Okay. I know you're not talking about Hacksaw right now.
Hacksaw hit on your mom, right, Josh?
He did. So there's a GIF out there on the internet of me in the front row with like a big boss man hat and a Hulk Hogan shirt. It was on Superstars on Saturday, and it was like Vince McMahon and Roddy Piper on commentary, and Hacksaw's coming out. You see me like, I'm doing like the ho, and like my thumbs at, I'm like fucking over the moon. It's like Hacksaw's my guy. And then Hacksaw stops before he gets in the ring, looks at my mom, like double takes, and then like gives her like the thumbs up.
Whoa.
And then, like, it was either Vince McMahon or Roddy Piper's like, well, he's got good taste in women. I'm like, you motherfuckers.
Oh, my God.
Leave Jackie Pryor, the good name of Jackie Pryor, out of your mouth.
Do you have this clip, like, saved to your computer?
I do. I will post it on our podcast, please. Whatever, yeah. After this.
Sounds good. All right. So after that, we have the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royale. I couldn't pay attention to anything happening here, so I just wrote down some of my favorite quotes from the commentary.
Sure, yeah.
Total mess.
I have Yoshi out first.
Yes, that's Yoshi was out first.
How do you know? Like, I feel like they just had... Well, and then they just said Sheamus came out, and then he entered a ring that was full of like 50 dudes. Yeah. It was 30, but yeah, like,
yeah, this isn't Saudi Arabia. Come on.
This isn't the greatest Honor of the Giant Battle Royal.
So I got when Brad Maddox is eliminated, JBL literally says, "Who is that?"
That's the general manager of Raw.
Echoes my feelings. I didn't know if that was either.
I have in my notes, too bad this means nothing.
Yeah. Michael Cole, I believe it was Michael Cole, screams like 3 times in a row to no answer. He says, "Is Sheamus trying to push Cesaro out?" And then 5 minutes later, JBL says, "I didn't even know Cesaro was in this thing."
Oh my God.
This is the state of wrestling right now.
And then we get to a point where there's like 11 guys left in the ring, and Michael Cole says, "I believe we still have 9 men left."
Those astute observation by Michael Cole.
That's literally all that I paid attention to during this, because it was such a fucking mess.
I have a note about like 3MB running wild at some point in this.
They're still running wild.
Well, you know, Jinder, you know what? I was looking at Jinder, I'm like, that physique is not jacked. And then I look at Jinder now, I'm like, that physique's jacked. That's, you're looking real jacked.
A Big Show eliminates R-Truth, and then he does this weird victory dance. Like, right up at the ropes, he does this dance, and apparently he was mocking R-Truth.
Another note I have is, like, The Miz was in this, and he was eliminated via Cobra. It's crazy to look at Miz's journey throughout the WWE. It's like, he's so, like, he's on fire right now, right? And he's, like, main evented WrestleMania, I think, like, what, 2 years before that? 3 years before that?
Yeah.
And to be eliminated via Cobra in a meaningless battle royal all these years later, it's like, I think probably in the next year or two, Miz will be main eventing WrestleMania again. But at this point, I was like, man, I'm bummed out for this guy.
Yeah. It
sucks.
It was also cool to see the New Day all sort of doing stuff pre-New Day. Like, because that's...
Xavier's hair was great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Xavier looks amazing. Yeah. Kofi has the steps spot, right? That so was, good. Like, kind of the start of his, like, what's Kofi going to do during the Battle Royale?
Yeah, it was like that or... Was it Rumble?
It was Rumble a couple years back.
That but like, but yeah, but like every like, it's like, oh, it's gonna be the thing. Yeah. Kofi's, you know, big spot.
Yeah, but it's like the New Day has been, I think, sort of like the most like consistent thing since I started watching wrestling. That the New Day has just been the New Day. So it was fun throwing this on and being like, hey, why are they all wearing different colors and like not dancing with a trombone?
I think this is when Xavier Woods was still with R-Truth.
I didn't even know.
Xavier Woods, when he first debuted, he was being pushed as the PhD candidate.
Oh, right.
And he was teamed up with R-Truth as his mentor.
That gimmick has so much, like, that gimmick's always worked really well, right? Like, Damian Sandow and Matt Stryker.
The intellectual, that does well with the...
Destroys liberals with logic.
Did Eric Rowan had that gimmick too, right?
Oh, for like 2 weeks, maybe.
So great if he did.
They tried so many things with Eric Rowan in such a short period of time.
The ending of this match, though.
Oh, it's great.
Oh my god, I was watching it. And I got goosebumps again. Like, as a wrestling fan, getting goosebumps, I was like, you know, like, the European uppercut, and he picks him up, and the place fucking...
The crowd loses their shit.
The crowd has been absolutely silent up to this point, except for the Fandango spot. And then, but yeah, they go nuts. It's amazing.
Because I remember, like, you know, like, I didn't think Cesaro was going to win that at all.
Mm-mm.
Like, and I remember, like, you know, that was at the time where... You know, everybody was behind Cesaro. Like, this guy's so good. Like, he's such a talent. And they weren't doing anything with him. So, and, like, we didn't know how useless the Andre the Giant battle was.
Yeah, this is where I legitimately thought I, like, was watching it. And I reflected upon it. And I was like, wow, this is the start of Cesaro's big push.
Yeah. He hits him with the European uppercut. He picks him up. Like, the place goes fucking nuts. Throws him over the top. And I was like, this is it. Yeah. like they're gonna give this guy the fucking strap.
He gets the handshake.
Yeah. It was good.
It was nice.
And that music.
Yeah.
Oh man, that Jack Swaggy music is so good. 2.5 bald heads out of 5.
Remember when Cesaro tore off his tuxedo as part of his entrance?
Oh yeah.
I liked that. Too.
You know, he made that himself.
All right, so after that, we have the John Cena versus Bray Wyatt match, speaking of Eric Rowan.
Speaking of useless.
Oh my god.
I like this match.
It was a good match. It could have been really cool, and it wasn't, okay? So the story was that Wyatt was trying to push John Cena into becoming a bad dude.
Yeah.
And make him go to that bad place, and he just doesn't, and it's so... dumb.
Not to skip ahead too much, but like at the end of the match, like John Cena's grabbing his
head.
He's
like freaking out.
Like he's exercising the demons out of his head, right?
I feel like it needed to end differently in order for that to be satisfying.
I think you either needed John Cena to stay the course and be good guy John Cena and lose
because of it.
Or
they needed worms on the mat.
Yeah.
holographic worms.
Definitely needed some worms on the mat. So we are kind of jumping ahead here. I want to say that this is like, what, 7 years too late for the John Cena Eminem video montage?
I have a big old note about Eminem here. weird choice of song.
Yeah.
That's my big note.
And I also wanted to, because we acknowledged Charlotte and Alexa and Sasha's contributions to Triple H's entrance, I wanted to give a big shout out to Marty Scurll
for being... I have the exact same note, the Marty Scurll.
And also Ricochet's denim hoodie that the singer's wearing.
Oh, man.
Also, Ricochet, what are you doing right now? come home.
That entrance is so fucking cool. Oh no, wait. Is the denim hoodie for
denim
that, or is the denim
is
hoodie
Randy's.
For Randy Orton?
You're wrong. It's the plague doctors are the, and like the lead singer looks like a sort of like demon skull guy.
That entrance is great.
Yeah,
I knew where you're going.
Yeah,
don't worry about it.
That
but yeah, two live bands for this WrestleMania.
Yeah,
look like an opening segment of Survivor.
I liked the dance around the fire.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was good.
I felt like, yeah.
It survived.
And like,
I was excited.
This match, I know that everyone says, like, this match is kind of the beginning of where Bray sort of loses his...
Brayness.
And
where he starts to get buried.
Yeah. But like, he looks like a fucking monster in this match. Like, he has that dope intro. Like, his... like
Brayness is very funny. It's a very funny word.
Luke Harper and Eric Rowan, like, are like terrifying. Yeah. And it's like, he does... he almost breaks John Cena. I really like this match. I don't think Bray looks weak losing this match. I still think he looks great.
Here's the problem. Like, you know, it's like, he doesn't look weak losing this match, right? Like, losing John Cena is not like, you know, a career ender. But how they booked him from then to now is insane. Like, you had this, like, Undertaker-ish kind of, like, vibe about this guy. And then, like, now you're, like, teaming up with Matt Hardy, which is fine, I guess, if they did something cool with that, which they didn't.
Nope.
Now what do you do with him?
Yeah, he's kind of...
You make him a wacky character? You make him a Santino? Have, like, Sister Abigail, like, in the front row, like...
No.
Getting all crazy?
Yeah, they kind of ruined him.
It's... Well, like, I'm excited for him to come back, because he's out right now, right?
But, like, what... But you just know. It's, yeah. They don't know what to do with a character like that
and
in 2018.
Definitely the... I think the top of the card where, like, he belongs as, like, a worker and as a character is so full right now that it's, like, at best, he's gonna, like... feud for the Intercontinental. They're gonna like stick him in another tag team or
maybe,
something.
But like, you know, it's a larger than life kind of character.
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
Really doing anything with.
I was gonna say, I feel like his gimmick is sort of a throwback, where like not a lot of people have really over the top gimmicks like that anymore in WWE. And if they do, they lose it real fast. Like, they'll have it in NXT, and then they kind of phase it out, like Finn or something like that.
Sure. Even Finn, like, you look at Finn now, and he's like, you know. Extraordinary man because what extra stuff.
Yeah, we've talked about this, that the extras cancel each other out, so he's just an ordinary man that does ordinary things.
It's a very confusing tagline he has. But like same kind of applies, right? Like, you know, you have something really special with Finn. You have like a great personality with a great talent who's got like a little bit extra, like that kind of like, again, Undertaker kind of vibe about him. And they're totally wasting him.
Yeah.
You know, when's the last time we saw the Demon when he came out to randomly beat Baron Corbin on a way it was like
Hell in a Cell.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wasn't he painted like a pumpkin?
They don't know what to do with gimmicks like that. And I feel like there'd be more space for Bray to do his thing if there were more people with weird gimmicks.
Totally. It's wrestling, right?
Yeah. Like, or if Bray was the only one doing it and they just committed. Like, because it's not like when Undertaker comes back for WrestleMania or Crown Jewel, it's not like we're like, oh, you know, like that's a weird, it's like, it's still the fucking Undertaker. It's still cool.
Yeah.
You know, like, because they commit to that bit. They give him a 25-minute entrance and like there's mystique, whereas like Bray is like, they don't buy into it the way that they've bought into the Undertaker.
Like, not to jump ahead too much, but like, you know, even like the Undertaker's entrance here, it's like, I was watching, I was like, man, it's a fucking Undertaker.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I still felt that. I was like, you know, like I was back as a kid, you know, just like watching it, dressing up like the Undertaker, like reversing like rubber gloves. But like, yeah, I was like kind of transported back as like a wrestling fan, right? Like, and I lost myself a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's what wrestling should be, right?
Yeah.
You should have those moments. It's not about an overall experience, about like those like special moments in wrestling. And they completely wasted Bray.
Yeah,
it's my point.
I feel like there's not much more to say about Bray Cena. We might as well just move on to
except I gave it 3.5 bald heads.
And you've actually written down bald heads. I want to just note that on your notes.
Again, I'm a total apologist for this match. I would have given it 4 bald heads.
You know, I feel like that's too high.
Okay, so there's that really intense package, I guess, for
tell us more about this package. Intense package. Yeah.
That promo package for Brock and Undertaker, where it has a lot of Paul Heyman saying, "Eat, sleep, conquer."
So I want to qualify with this, that Kevin and Lauren do not like Paul Heyman at all.
I've warmed up to him.
Can we just back up for half a second?
Okay,
we forgot the Hall of Fame induction.
Oh, yeah, I totally didn't pay attention to that.
So we got Jake, Lita, Paul Bearer's weird kids, Mr. T, looking good, Pity and the Fool, Bao Tacos. Who am I talking about here?
You wrote down Bao Tacos?
Yeah, I don't, That old fucking nut.
Listen,
I was
heavy
into the beers at this point. but yeah, the Ultimate Warrior was the mainstay. And little did he know, he would be dead 48 hours later.
Yeah.
Oh my God, really?
Really.
I didn't realize it was that soon.
Is that
it's like Dee Dee Ramone in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And little did we know, as fans, we'd be haunted by the Warrior Award every year.
Yeah.
The Hall of Fame.
And the specter of Dana Warrior.
I really want like them to have like a promo like ooh.
Have them like the spirit of Ultimate Warrior haunting whatever disabled child gets the award. I mean, this was supposed to go to the crew.
This wasn't the intention.
This was supposed to go to the key grip.
But anyway, that old racist died, so
yeah. It's so funny that they inducted him in New Orleans, right? Yeah. After everything that he said about Hurricane Katrina.
Jesus Christ. Said all I want to say about the Ultimate Warrior.
Anyway, fuck that guy.
That clown.
Yeah. So Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar. We don't really like Paul Heyman all that much.
I just think he's a little too much.
I really like it.
It's wrestling.
Sometimes he does a really good job, but sometimes it's just irritating and like too long.
I like Paul Heyman in small doses. I think like him in this video package is great. Whenever Lesnar's doing like a feud and he's on TV every week doing like the promos are all the same. They're all the same. They're all like any one of them would be great,
yeah.
But seeing like six of them in a row is just I don't care.
I also really like his face expressions when like during the match and stuff.
Yeah.
He's great.
But he's over the top.
He commits.
He makes the match like a little bit more special, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like Brock and Undertaker made that match. The build up made that match. Like, you know, everything on the line about it made the match.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it's a little salt and pepper on the old steak, you know?
Brock Lesnar doesn't do shit to make a match special. Like,
he comes out in a fucking toque.
Yeah, he comes out in a Ryback toque.
A toque and undies.
If I had access to a Ryback toque, I'd wear it all the time.
Oh my God.
I'm going to find you a Ryback toque, and I'm going to hold you to that.
But like, even now, like, I don't know how much this was the case, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But now, like, when Brock Lesnar is advertised to have a match at a pay-per-view or whatever, like, Brock is doing none of the heavy lifting on promoting that match. It's all Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think the best wrestling segment that has happened in the past few years, hands down, was the Samoa Joe choking out Paul Heyman in the middle of the ring on Raw. And that was all, I mean, like, Samoa Joe is so cool.
So cool. But, like, you know, and they completely wasted that, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, for sure.
Right, because, like, they had, like, a legitimate threat to Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
With that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's not get too off track, but, like, you know, like, that's, like, the last, I think, in my head, the legitimate threat to Brock Lesnar.
Well, I mean, Roman beat him.
That's not legitimate.
But anyway, yeah, Paul Heyman's great at promoting the fight. He just, I need him in smaller doses, and I do love him during the match, like, freaking out. I love him freaking out when Lesnar actually wins.
Because, like, the meat and potatoes match, like, the build, like, looking at Lesnar, Lesnar's a freak, mm-hmm. you know, and, like, his older stuff, like, before this, like, back in, like, you know, 2007, 2008, whenever Brock was doing his thing, he was, like, a complete monster, right? So I think Paul Heyman, like, getting added into the mix is, like, the perfect thing for him.
Mm-hmm.
And it just helped build this match even more. And, like, The Undertaker, like, nobody thought in a million years he was going to lose this match. You know, watching it again, I was like, holy shit. Like, I forgot how heavy this was.
I love all the shots of the people reacting.
So
they did
good.
Such a good job,
and
including those.
Holding off on Brock's music for so long after...
Yeah, just
after
letting everyone react.
Just letting everyone be like, is it really happening?
Yeah. And there's like 2 minutes, and then they say, and, like, your winner, Brock Lesnar, and they still haven't played his music yet. And
the announcer's, like, laying out.
Yeah.
Like, just everything about it was just, like, perfectly done.
Yeah.
To, like, everybody, like, yeah, this is happening.
Yeah.
It's your boy's done at WrestleMania.
He's done.
Yeah.
And he never came back.
So that's where do you think this ranks in the thank you Taker chance of WrestleManias over the past 5 years?
It's got to be number one.
This is
the most genuine.
Yeah.
You think this is better than the hat and coat in the ring and setting the stadium on fire?
That stadium on fire was an accident, to be fair. I think the hat and coat in the ring was intentional, but I'm not sure. Yeah, but yeah, like I think this is like the original like thank you Taker kind of mm-hmm. bye.
Yeah, like I think at this year at WrestleMania, like he's probably done. But everybody's like fool me once.
Yeah.
You know, like, shame on me.
Well, he came back for Crown Jewel. Yeah. He's going to come back for...
He's going to come back, like, WrestleMania 36.
He's going to come back for every Saudi Arabia show.
He's going to come back for the next Great Balls of Fire.
That kind of money.
I would come back anytime they offered me, like, a bajillion dollars, like they definitely did. Mm-hmm. Like, think about how much they must have offered Shawn Michaels to get him back.
That's the biggest bummer ever. It's like, so like Shawn Michaels was like the one guy who like remained mm-hmm. retired.
Yeah.
And then like they threw like, they backed up the truck at his front door of money. And then he's like, yeah, I'll come back for this one. But that's probably it. Like that's like, that was his like actual last match. When he could have had like a great match, like a takeover or something like that, right? Like with one of the guys he's working with. But now it's like in Saudi Arabia, like really fucking... shitty so-so
but like
match.
Do we consider Crown Jewel as like canon?
Is no, it's real. Unfortunately.
All right.
Yeah, it's also too bad that Undertaker got concussed like during this match because
that boy was knocked silly like halfway through.
It's just it's upsetting because I feel like this was maybe the last year that they probably could have gotten a good match out of him because like that I think after I've been conditioned to see Undertaker just to be like oh god, and when he starts this match I'm like hey he's moving all right,
hey, look, okay, look at this guy,
I wrote
weird
that
Chuck Liddell
moving
haircut.
Well. Oh man, he has like an anti-devil lock.
Looking all right there, Undertaker.
But it's too bad because I think like this was their last shot at having like a good match before he kind of got too old and too broken.
Sure.
And there were still spots in this match that were like, oh man, this is great. When he goes up for the old school and Lesnar gets him up for the F5, like that was great, you know. But it's just, he spends most of it, like, you can see him mouthing, where am I?
It's also, like, look at the caskets, I was like, I wonder if they have, like, a CM Punk casket.
They did.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It was like, actually, I had to go back and rewind it.
Nah.
It's like, all those sneaky fucks, they got it in there, but they didn't spend much time on it.
Yeah. I liked all the caskets, that was really cool.
Yeah.
Very, like, this whole match is just in, like, the entrances and the... aftermath
and like, even the entrance, like it was weird, like knowing what I know now, like after like watching it, like Paul Heyman kept on saying like you earned this, like you deserve this, like to Brock Lesnar when he's coming out,
mm-hmm.
which was crazy because it's like, you know, that had to be in Brock's head as well, like you know you're going over.
Well, apparently Paul Heyman didn't know, like apparently the only people who I remember hearing this or reading this somewhere that the only people who knew the finish were like Undertaker, Lesnar, and like Vince McMahon.
That's crazy because like again, like even watching Paul and like him like pep talking Brock, it mm-hmm. was like, you know, knowing what I know now is like that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
How many bald heads did you give that
one? How many bald heads?
I had this down as 2.5 bald heads.
Oh.
I would add an extra star and a half for the ending of that match though.
So
just everyone freaking out.
The quality
two
of the
and
match.
Two and a half bald heads and one star.
And then, like, I would put, like, an asterisk and then two more stars after that.
Okay. An asterisk is technically a star.
I'm sorry, two more bald heads.
What's the conversion ratio on bald heads to stars?
So it's like stubble on the head. 4 for the levity, 2.5 for the actual match.
Okay.
So if you liked the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royale, you're going to love the Vicky Guerrero Divas Championship Invitational.
They're like shit matches.
This is crazy that this is the first time that the Divas belt was ever defended at WrestleMania, and it was in this shit show.
And I think the only time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I miss AJ Lee. Like, she was great.
Yeah. Who doesn't?
Yeah, she was awesome. Like,
amazing,
she was the best
finish.
Best part of this match, hands down.
I liked that.
Thanks for taking her out, CM Punk.
I like that Tamina was dressed like a fan of AJ Lee in line to meet her at a Hot Topic. And man, I really like Vicky Guerrero as well. She fucking kills it.
Yeah.
That's like all that I have to say.
I have horrible, what a mess. Lots of botches. I guess the twins can't lift up Layla.
Yeah.
So they just drop her. It's another note I have.
The 5 suplex spot was so funny and like
bad.
They spent so long setting it up and still and like botched it.
And the pin spot, like I have the pin, like they tried to do like four pins at the same time.
Yeah.
But, like, they didn't execute it. Like, none of the jump-ins were... Like, the whole thing was, like, a complete debacle.
Yeah.
Like, thank God for women's wrestling right now.
Yeah.
Because, like, I reflect on this, and I'm like, this was such a bad state for women's wrestling. But now it's, like, light years.
And it's great seeing, like, the women in this match who have...
Totally, like there's Natalia, like
yeah, and Alicia Naomi. Fox, yeah. And Alicia like Fox, yeah, and it's like it's great to see them in this match and be like, just know what's coming for them and know that like they're
hang in there,
yeah, you know, it's
it
great.
Gets better,
it's, it and gets it's better.
I feel bad for like Emma and AJ Lee and like the women in that match who were like great and just like aren't with the company anymore.
Emma's like one of those people. If you would have put Emma in there right now, like even like 2 years after she was there, she would do great.
Oh yeah.
Hold on, you know who does a great Emma impression? Campbell, can you do it? Oh, sorry, Emelina.
You've been whiting so long.
Oh, that's so weird, right in my headphones.
You've been waiting so long for this main event. We got Orton, Batista, and Daniel Bryan.
No, before that we got Mean Gene, who's the best.
Oh my God. My note here is, there's a bunch of old men yelling about shit that happened 30 years ago.
You know what? That's about right.
Yeah, that's like, about that's right. About WrestleMania.
Paul Orndorff looked like a guy who just wandered in off the street. Yelling at Hulk Hogan. Piper looking crazy as fuck, and then Mr. T comes in for a quick handshake.
Yep.
Weird segment.
Yeah. No.
And then we're on to the main event. I gave that one half bald head.
I'm so glad you caught me on that and we got to talk about it.
Good stuff. Keeping this pod moving.
So we got Randy Orton.
Yeah, now we got Viper. Randy Orton's bad live band with that dude.
I think they did a great job at that song.
I like that better when he's coming down with the sperms.
Yeah.
Coming down with the sperms.
Is that a disturbing
song? That's our alternate podcast name.
Down with the sperms.
And we got Batista. I would like Batista's theme song.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and like, what? He didn't do like the machine gun thing proper this time. Like, you know, I just was watching it. And I also felt bad for Batista, like, coming down. It's like everybody's really shitting on him here.
Yeah.
You know, and he's so good.
Yeah.
And he's such a, like, a lovable guy. I was watching some of the pre-WrestleMania, like, interviews and, like, press conferences and stuff like that. And he was just shitting on all the nerds in the audience. You know, and I was laughing so hard. I was like, this guy's hilarious.
He's like Homer doing the itchy and scratchy.
Yeah, exactly.
What the hell are you talking about?
So, like, sorry for all these nerds that can't appreciate what I'm doing. It's like he's going off on them. And then he left, like, shortly after. And I was like, oh, man, we really wasted that.
Yeah. Well, so rumors are that he's coming back to fight Triple H, right?
That is because of that crown jewel spot.
Well, that's if he doesn't get Drax and Guardians 3.
Yeah.
Things he said.
I mean, like, I would be into Batista coming back for doing, like, a little WrestleMania.
Totally. You know? And, like, every interview I've heard with him, he's, like, legitimately into coming back if they want to use him right. Mm. That's his, like, contingency, right? Like, he's like...
Good
it's
luck.
Like, I want to come back for a proper run.
He's like, I really want to come back to put Hunter over.
Yeah. Which is totally what's going to happen.
Let him work one of my limbs.
Yeah. Give me a nice monster vignette.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like,
and then I'll knock Stephanie over, and then Triple H will pin me.
Nice. But like, he wants to do like the house shows. He wants to do like, you know, like pay-per-views. He wants to do like a proper run.
Oh, does he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, I would be so down with a proper Batista run. Anyway, I love Batista a lot.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you know that, like, they will give him all of that, but the entirety of his time back will be him feuding with, like, Rey Mysterio.
Oh, of course. But him and Rey feuded so good, though. Thought you were my friend, Rey.
Yeah.
My best friend. He's, like, he's grabbing his head.
There's no promo package for this one because they used up all the good stuff at the top of the show.
What are you going to put in there? Batista?
Right. Yeah. Then put in Batista winning the Royal Rumble and everybody just shitting all over it.
The worst.
Setting a precedent for years to come.
Man, they really fucked up those Royal Rumbles.
I like this match a lot, though. Like, I think this is much better than the opening Daniel Bryan match because you still have...
Sure.
You still have Orton doing the whole, like, I'm gonna be that classic heel, I'm gonna work the arm, but I think
Orton's a great worker too. Yeah. It's like, you know, yeah, him and Batista do like a pretty solid match with like,
and that's, yeah, I think, and that's the thing, is
he's having a good time, yeah, at this, yeah, point.
Adding Batista in the mix, I think, breaks the monotony of just like heel working on Daniel, sure, Bryan's arm. And this almost works, it almost kind of works like a tag team match where you, yeah, have, yeah, like Daniel keeps getting pushed out and it's basically
kind,
like,
of like a greater good kind, yeah, of thing. It's like, and, we know we have to do this. To,
yeah,
like,
and then, well, but it's like he just keeps getting knocked to the outside of the ring. They keep getting him out. And, yeah, then he basically has these little like hot tag moments where he'll jump in out of nowhere, do a thing. Gotcha. And then, mm-hmm, Orton and Batista will just like beat the shit out of him and throw him out again. And it's so you get these like little pops of like, every time Daniel Bryan's not on screen, everybody should be asking,
where's Daniel Bryan?
But yeah, like I think it works really, really well. It's like everything that I didn't like about the Triple H Daniel Bryan match, they do those exact same things, but just like a million times better. Totally. Here.
Yeah, yeah.
I did have that. I thought that the, like, there were really horrible camera angles and like camera work happening during this match. Like, from,
that's
like
a great observation, actually. It's like
all of the stuff, yeah, happening out of the ring is being shot from below, and like it's definitely, it's so obviously a man, yeah, running around with a handheld camera, and like, it, you can't, no, even see, you can't see what, yeah, Randy Orton is throwing Daniel Bryan onto. I was like, is he throwing him on the barricade or the stairs?
Well, the iconic shot of like Daniel Bryan like celebrating at the end of the match, the two titles and like the Jag Tinda side going up right in front of him. Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
Speaking of like all the stuff going on kind of outside of the ring, do you think that the, all of the stuff with like Triple H and the Crooked Ref and Stephanie and the Sledgehammer, do you think that like it was kind of overbooked? And like, because I think that if they had had that in the opening match, yeah, with Triple H, like it would have made that match less monotonous and would have made that more interesting.
Like, you get all that shit out of the way,
yeah,
at the front, and then like you just have an actual match at the end.
Yeah.
Well, like, I mean, like, overbooking is WrestleMania's thing, right? Like, you got to just toss it all out there. You got to put it all out there. Yeah, like you got that. You know, Triple H lost in the first match, and then he beat the shit out of Daniel Bryan afterwards because, mm-hmm, he was so frustrated.
It's like,
and then it was like revenge of Triple H at the, mm-hmm, end of this match.
Yeah,
right?
It's, I, very, it was fitting. Great.
So, like, in character, it's very, there's always a plan B.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, just in terms of like me being interested in what I'm watching, I feel like they put so much. Like, sure, you already have that RKO powerbomb table spot. I don't also need like a sledgehammer spot and Stephanie, sure, taking a bump in those insanely high heels.
But that's it though. It's like, you know, some people are really gonna love that. Some people, mm-hmm, who like know wrestling, like real, like just like I know these motherfuckers. I know what these guys, mm-hmm, are trying to do to me. I thought it was perfect. Like, honestly, like, I was watching it again. I was like, you know, I don't think this is overbooked. I think, like, they planted a good seed out of my head about Dan O'Brien, like, not winning.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, at the end of it, like, the payoff.
They
like,
pay oh, it the off. Payoff. That's, yeah, why. Yeah. That's, yeah, the only reason it works, that they have all, yeah, this bullshit. Like,
exactly. Like,
it adds tension, and then it pays off, and
like,
perfect.
Watching it now, like, maybe I can be like, yeah, maybe that was overbooked. But, like, watching at the time,
mm-hmm,
I was totally lost in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Completely lost in it. And it was, like, I think it was perfect. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And it's that, like, all of those shots of him at the end with the confetti coming down, yeah, and him, like, just holding onto the belt. It's, like, it's amazing. Like,
yeah.
It's, yeah, it is absolutely perfect.
I think it's, like, probably, like, it's got to be top five, like, most iconic WrestleMania moments. Mm-hmm. Like, Daniel Bryan with the two, like, titles. Like, that's got to,
yeah,
be.
The, like, yeah. And it's the best Michael Cole commentary of all time, yeah. The Miracle on Bourbon Street. Yeah. It's fantastic.
WrestleMania!
Yeah. That was a little...
So the two other things that I kind of thought were both to do with the same spot. So first off, RIP Randy Orton's back.
Yeah.
I love his ongoing feud with TV monitors, yeah, on the table.
And dropping people like carelessly on the tables.
Yeah.
But very meticulously clearing the tables after like this incident.
Oh, he's making a face afterwards like, oh fuck. I just ruined somebody's life.
I love that fucking face he makes now. Ooh.
Yeah, like it's classic, like, as soon as he hit that one Singh brother with it, he was like, ooh.
Whoops.
And, like, that's part of the Orton canon now.
It's on,
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
My bad.
Because that dude, like, flipped in a half.
Yeah.
That was like a Neville flip onto the table.
It's beautiful.
So, and I also thought that the, like, the stretcher spot was a little bit much.
Oh, come on.
Oh, yeah.
I just think it's funny that, like, Dan O'Brien takes takes an RKO through a table and gets put on a stretcher.
There's
Mankind got thrown off of Hell in a Cell.
Listen, that's a different time. They need the stretcher. It's part of the build.
Yeah.
It's like, there's no way he's going to win this match. He's on a stretcher. as a child, like, I was watching Hulk Hogan get, like, sat on by Earthquake. And then him wheeled out. And then them having, like, 3 months worth of, like, stretcher matches after that.
Yeah.
They had Hogan 911 that you can, like, send in mail to that I totally wrote a letter to. Aww.
Dear Hulk Hogan, you're a fucking racist.
I didn't know this information at the time. I'm all about it. Like, I get it. It's, like, over the top, but it's also wrestling.
Sure. I'm nitpicking for the sake of being a dick. It's, like, nice. It's a great match. It's, like, the spot works. It's when he fights his way off the stretcher. It's fantastic. I just think
get off me.
I'm just
not enough treatment.
Yeah. I'm just, like, it's just funny. I'm just, like, Mankind, like, you know, like, you're telling me that's the same. You're telling me, like, a 2-foot drop onto a table is the same as being thrown off of a cage.
Mick Foley's body was forged in the fires of hell. Like, he's not from this world.
Got a nice little shot of Connor the Crusher there at the end as well, you know?
Rest in peace, buddy.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
I give this match 4 stars. Or wait, four bald heads.
Four bald heads. My bad. Okay. Overall, like, what do we think? Is this as good as the first time that you watched it? Does it hold up under sort of a modern wrestling lens?
You know, I had good flashbacks during it. Like, I got goosebumps a couple times. I was, like, watching it. I, like, really invested. I think at the time, it was way more meaningful. Like, just, like, everything that event was about. You know, the transitional, like to Daniel Bryan, like, being the champion. Like, the Undertaker streak. Everything that happened that pay-per-view, I think, like, at the time, if you're watching it live, way more impactful than it is now. But it still holds up as, like, again, like, a really solid pay-per-view. And, yeah, it was awesome.
I've never watched it a second time after the first time that I watched it live, so I can't really go back.
I, like, obviously I didn't watch it live, but I think it really holds up. One thing I really notice about it that, like, when I compare it to, like, contemporary pay-per-views is that it didn't, like, there was no drag moment. Like, I guess because there's fewer matches per show. Like, at this point, whereas now there's, like, 50 million matches on a pay-per-view event. I don't know if that actually holds up or if it just feels that way now that I get very sleepy and I get, like, there are moments that drag or there are matches that feel longer.
Yeah,
and I feel like
emotionally invested into it maybe than, you know, like in this pay-per-view, there's a lot of, like, build for, like, you know.
Yeah, but I feel like none of the matches, like, all of the matches have a really good pace and they don't drag.
Yeah.
They're not long, which is good. And when I'm watching it, because I wasn't involved in wrestling at the time, I don't have that much emotion invested in it, other than, like, the promo package made me invested in Daniel Bryan.
Totally.
But you think I'd be more invested in current pay-per-views.
Yeah.
But and like, yet I find them way harder to watch now.
Because you see, like, all the matches on Raw.
Maybe so, yeah.
You know, it's like every possible pairing you can imagine, like, has already been done on Raw for, like, 3 weeks before the pay-per-view, so it's like, why do I care?
Yeah, maybe you're right.
I don't want to see Finn Balor versus Bobby Lashley again.
I think the thing that, like, I really like about this pay-per-view, and I think the thing that I appreciate about certain other pay-per-views as well, like WrestleMania 18, I think, is having kind of like a narrative of connective tissue kind of going throughout, that this WrestleMania is the story of, like, this is the Daniel Bryan one, where it starts and it ends with Daniel Bryan, and there's other stuff that happens, but really this is the thing that is about,
like, the line that draws
and even if it's something as dumb as, like, I'm pretty sure it's WrestleMania 18 that has, like, the Hardcore Championship changes hands, like, between every match.
Can we both agree that the Hardcore Championship needs to come back?
Yes.
Yeah,
I love the Hardcore Championship.
I think everybody here
and that it's defended 24/7.
Yeah,
like, that is
that's the WrestleMania, I'm pretty sure it's 18, where it's between every match they go backstage and they're interviewing whoever has the Hardcore Championship, and then someone out of nowhere fucking hits them with, like, a chair or a frying pan and pins them and becomes the new Hardcore Champion.
I completely don't remember that.
It's great, and it ties the whole thing together.
That's
so
awesome.
Well, where it's, you're just like, all right, now we're checking back in with this, and it's like I like having that narrative through line, even
like
if it's something stupid like that.
Do you not remember because you were also hardcore champion that night, Josh?
So to give this some parting thoughts, I think we're going to go through and we're each going to have a high spot and a botched spot. So it can be something that we already talked about, it can be a match, or it can be something that we didn't get to, but just your favorite little thing about this pay-per-view and the worst thing.
Well, for me, it's like 100% the Cesaro getting Big Show out, like the pop, the goosebumps, everything about that moment. Again, like, close second is Daniel Bryan, but, like, I think that, for me, was the high spot. Low spot, I'd have to say, was the Vicky Guerrero, whatever, Invitational Divas Battle Royal armbar.
I meant to bring this up earlier, but I forgot. I was dying laughing in the middle of the Triple Threat match when I saw there were so many tassels and feathers written ringside.
It's like, how many birds were killed in the making of this match?
From, like, Naomi's leg warmers.
No, but, and again, it makes me appreciate so much, like, you know, like, you know, the women now that are doing their thing, it's night and day, right?
So, oh, yeah.
It's awesome to see. But, like, yeah, so I think those two probably.
Julian, did you have a high spot in the match spot?
Josh took my high spots, actually. Cesaro winning the Battle Royale, Daniel Bryan winning the championships. And then, I loved the Shield at the time. And them going over the New Age Outlaws, I think, was pretty great, who were my favorite, like, growing up. I think the day after WrestleMania 30, I changed my cover photo to a photo of Dean Ambrose.
That's awesome.
And literally no one reacted to it. And I was like, I've made a huge mistake.
I think it's funny, in like, given that, because the Shield would break up, like, what, SummerSlam of that year?
Something like that.
Basically, like, yeah. About 6 months later. Like, I would have imagined that they would have had a bigger spot on the card for sort of where they were at the time. Like,
I don't know. It was the Shield at the time. It was like, they were on the rise. Now they're like the top three guys in the company.
Mm-hmm. Julian, did you have a low spot or a botched spot?
Not that I can recall, no.
All right.
Foreign?
Perfect pay-per-view.
10 out of 10 bald heads.
The Julian ain't guaranteed.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Lauren, what was your high spot?
Okay, so in order to not repeat the high spots already stated, I'm going a little bit weirder with this. So my high spot was when Brock Lesnar enters the ring. He's like getting himself all psyched up for the match, and he's waiting for Undertaker to come out. He does this thing with his mouth where he looks like a shark. He just abruptly opens his mouth like rah rah, but it's completely silent. So that was my favorite moment, because
awesome.
It was just Brock Lesnar being a ding-a-ling.
That was the high spot of this podcast. Right?
And what was your botched spot?
It's a line said by Jerry the King Lawler, if you can believe it, during the women's battle royal or whatever the fuck. He says, "My eyeballs are on pleasure overload." Fuck you.
He's the worst. He's so terrible.
What about you, Kimball?
So my high spot was in the aftermath of Undertaker losing. You have this long, drawn-out silence of shock and awe, and Michael Cole says, "You gotta be wondering what's going through the mind of the Undertaker right now." And some genius in the crowd at that moment just shouts, "You suck!"
Oh my god.
It's so
awesome.
It's so sad because he's concussed and he just lost his legacy, but it's the funniest thing. It gets me every time. And my botched spot, the worst thing about this pay-per-view by far, was during the toy commercial. When Ricky the Dragon Steamboat comes out in a fucking bright red karate gi,
awesome.
And he's doing some like Mr. Miyagi voice.
It's the best.
It's the most embarrassing thing. Everyone else in that segment is like childish, but still like normal. And you have him like dressed up in a child's Halloween costume.
The only guy. We told you to dress in street clothes. You showed up in this gi.
Should have come as every man, Steve Austin.
Like Paul Orndorff, who just wandered here. Nobody invited him.
Anyway, that was the first episode of the
podcast.
Yeah, the Stone Cold Shots podcast.
Episode one.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back with another pay-per-view to revisit and rewatch in a couple of weeks.
Perfect.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.